I'm going to call this meeting of the Preventive Health Policy Division to order. This is the first meeting we are having of the 2021 session. There is a quorum. My name is Mike Freiberg. I'm the chair of this committee, and I am calling this meeting pursuant to House Rule 10.01. This is a remote hearing. First, I will turn things over to our committee legislative assistant, Lindy Somick, to take the roll.
Representative Freiberg.
Here.
Representative Bierman.
Present.
Representative Grunhagen. Representative Grunhagen. Representative Akam.
Grunhagen here.
Thank you. Representative Akam.
Present.
Representative Egbadje.
Present.
Representative Ackland. Representative Carlson. Representative Franson.
Present.
Representative Heinzman.
Present.
Representative Morrison. Representative Pryor.
Present.
Thank you. We have eight committee members present, Chair.
Okay. Thank you. So it's pretty typical at the first meeting of a committee for the members to introduce themselves. So if you want to, if you could do that, I guess, maybe just say what area you represent, you know, what term you're in, if you have any hopes for this committee for the upcoming session, I'd be interested to hearing that, but in maybe one or two sentences, because we want to, we have a lot of very important information to hear from MDH. So I'm Mike Freiberg, chairing this committee, which is a new committee, and I'm excited at the opportunity to do so. I'm in my fifth term representing all or parts of Crystal, Golden Valley, New Hope, and Robbinsdale. Hope we can take some exciting action in this committee during this session. There's a lot of great members on it, and I'm excited to work with all of you. Maybe next I'll turn it over to Representative Bierman, our vice chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Robert Bierman here, District 57A, Lakeville, Apple Valley area. And I, too, am excited for this committee. The folk in healthcare is extremely important for all of our constituents in every district and look forward to our work ahead.
Thank you. Representative Grunhagen, who is our Republican lead, would you like to introduce yourself? Maybe I'll give you another 5 or so seconds. I know it took you a little bit to unmute yourself before. Okay, we'll move on in alphabetical order. I'm sure we'll give Representative Grunhagen a chance to introduce himself here. Representative Akam.
Thank you. Good morning, Representative Patty Akam. I represent House District 44B, which is parts of Minnetonka, Plymouth, and then the City of Woodland, as my second term here in the Minnesota House, and excited to be on this committee.
Thank you. Representative Egbadje.
Thanks so much, Mr. Chair. My name is Esther Egbadje. I am the representative from House District 59B, which is Minneapolis and parts, downtown Minneapolis and parts of Northside. I'm really looking forward to being on this committee and, you know, hoping that we can talk about kind of the whole health and wellness of our communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Is Representative Ackland here? See, I'm not seeing her name. Representative Carlson. Oh, and it looks like he may not have signed on yet either. So Representative Franson.
Hi there, Representative Franson, Douglas County, representing and Ottertail, representing the northeastern part of Douglas County and the eastern half of Ottertail County.
Thank you. Glad to have you here. Representative Heinzman.
Yes, Representative Heinzman. I represent District 10A. That's the Brainerd Lakes area. My most, or I should say the primary interest in this committee that I have is being here to make sure that I voice the concerns of those that would like to be able to continue to make the best possible choices for their health, and glad to participate. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Heinzman. I know Representative Morrison was going to be late. Representative Pryor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Lori Pryor. I represent Southern Minnetonka, Northern Eden Prairie. This is my third term, and I am very excited to be on this committee. Certainly, we find out that we start out in the midst of very important work in terms of preventive health, but I know there's a lot of other issues that we can bring forward and this committee can address, and I look forward to all of the work that we have ahead.
Sure, thank you. Representative Grunhagen, are you available? Okay, maybe I'll turn to staff then. Ms. Somick, would you, our committee legislative assistant, would you like to introduce yourself?
My name is Lindy Somick. I'm your committee legislative assistant for the Preventive Health Division, and I've been with the House for 2 years.
Mr. Anderson from DFL Research.
Morning, everybody. My name is Eric Anderson. I work in DFL Research. I've been with the House since 2013 and look forward to working with all of you.
Ms. Olson, I think you're with GOP Research.
Yes, Chelsea Olson. I've been at the House since 2013, working in research since 2015, and previously worked on Johnson Commerce.
Thanks. Ms. Takenholtze, our committee administrator.
Hi, I'm Laura Takenholtze. I'll be the committee administrator for this committee. I've been at the House doing various roles for quite a few years now. Excited to be here.
Glad to have you here. Let's see, Ms. Clarkvist from House Research.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Elizabeth Clarkvist with House Research. I cover the Health Department and public health issues in House Research.
Okay, great. Let's see, I believe everybody else is, did I leave anybody out? I think everybody else is part of our testimony for later. Okay, Representative Grunhagen. Okay, thought I'd give him one more shot. Okay, well, thank you all for doing that. I think we have a lot of great staff, a lot of great members. I'm really excited to be working with all of you. As part of this committee, we'll be tackling a variety of issues related to preventive health, and we're still sort of figuring out the contours of exactly what that would mean, but I sort of felt like, you know, we're the whole issue of the COVID-19 vaccine, its distribution is of such critical importance right now to the state that it would be, you know, and is likely something that's going to take up some time in our committee. I thought we should waste no time and hear from the Department of Health right off the bat about how efforts are going and what the Department of Health is doing exactly related to vaccine distribution and prioritization. So I'd like to hear from the department at this point. There will be time for member questions. I'd ask members to hold their questions to the end. You know, feel free to raise your hand at any point and we'll put you in the queue for questions. But I do really appreciate that we have Commissioner Jan Malcolm from the Department of Health here, as well as Infectious Disease Director Chris Ayersman. I know they have a lot of things going on right now, so I really appreciate that they were able to come here to testify at our first committee, and I know they've already testified at a couple other ones as well. So appreciate all the demands that you're so responsive to, all the demands being put on your time here. And so I think with that, I will just turn it over to Commissioner Malcolm. Let's see, if you are talking, you might be muted.
You would think I would have figured that out by now. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And members, good morning. I'm Jan Malcolm, Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Health. Just a quick how grateful we are for a Preventive Health Committee to create a forum for talking specifically about prevention. And Mr. Chair, you're so right. We're at a critical moment in the COVID-19 pandemic. Finally, with vaccines. Well, I shouldn't say finally, it's historic and remarkable that we, less than 1 year in, have vaccines that have been developed that are effective. But it allows us to go on offense against this disease, to prevent it from making people ill and developing clinical symptoms. I'm going to spend zero more time other than just to acknowledge that this is one of the most amazing, challenging, massive, and complicated public health endeavors of all time, and certainly of our time. And I'm just grateful for the excellence of the people at the health department and our local public health partners, our partnership with private healthcare systems and the community-based organizations, all of whom are needed to execute this work. But it's I will, at this point, introduce Infectious Disease Director Chris Ayersman. We are so lucky to have Chris's level of expertise on infectious disease epidemiology and on vaccines in particular. So I'm going to just turn it over right to you, Chris, and I will be here for your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I will go quickly through the slides because I know that really what you want is the opportunity to ask questions. So I'll try and go over a number of the key concepts, and then we should have time to answer your questions. So just want to acknowledge that right now we're at we have two vaccines that have been approved. I also want to acknowledge that we're only just 2 days over a month since the first vaccine was approved. I think sometimes, you know, people express frustration and it's not going fast enough. Just over a month ago, we didn't even have any vaccines for COVID approved in this country. And a month later, we've had, you know, millions of people vaccinated. So just want to keep that forefront. Whoops, just one thing, Lisa, go back. I just want to acknowledge that the two different vaccines have very different storage and handling requirements. So the Pfizer must be stored at minus 80 degrees Celsius and has to be shipped in 975 dose increments, which makes it fairly challenging to maneuver in terms of getting it to small locations. So we've had to do some creative things there. The Moderna is advantageous. It's normal freezer temperatures and 100 dose increments. Next slide. So just to say, what is our role as the state? Our role is facilitation and oversight of timely administration of doses that are allocated to the state. We direct the federal government as to where they should ship the vaccine in the state. And then we ensure safe administration by vaccine providers, mostly private health care and pharmacies. Next slide. So I'm sure you have seen this before. We've shared this a lot. In the phase where we've had limited doses, we are looking at a phased approach to vaccination, that is starting with the highest risk and moving on. And that's the time frame that we're in right now. Next slide. So we have been in phase 1A. Just to note that the addition of long-term care residents happened on December 1st. That was something that was not in our planning assumptions since August. And then for phase 1B, the change was to not only have essential workers, but persons 75 years and older. And I do acknowledge that with the announcement yesterday, all of these things are, you know, have changed. Next slide. So our allocation process is that we do have a vaccine allocation advisory group that's been made up of statewide representatives, you know, leading healthcare providers, bioethicists, state, local, and tribal public health representatives, providers representing diverse community groups, and they have helped us review the federal recommendations and provide input on how we should sub-prioritize vaccine for Minnesota. We did, you know, have a meeting just on Monday with them to talk about phase 1B. We also solicited public input. We are working on putting that guidance together. However, again, as I said, everything has changed since yesterday. Ultimately, Governor Walz makes the final decision on recommendations. But as I said, we will have their recommendations coming out. Next slide. This just goes through the different sub-priorities of phase 1A. You have to keep in mind that even for phase 1A, that's 500,000 people in Minnesota, and when we're receiving a vaccine in increments of roughly, you know, 60,000 a week, we don't have enough for everyone. So we focus on personnel in hospitals, in COVID units, in ICUs, emergency departments, really the, you know, high focus on COVID. In our long-term care facilities, we focus on skilled nursing, so staff there, as well as the residents, because they are the most vulnerable. Next slide. And I will note, we did provide sufficient doses for that phase. We're in progress now in priority two. This is expanding to all acute care personnel, adding assisted living, both the staff and the residents. So we're working our way through priority two. And then in phase 1A, priority three, next slide, we're adding in all the remaining healthcare providers, as well as our group home residents, both physical and intellectual disabilities, and other adult residents in residential care facilities. So those groups are in priority group three. Next slide. One of the things that I want to acknowledge is that the vaccination of our elders is really important. The feds established a federal pharmacy partnership program, which has some benefits. You can see all the things that these pharmacies will do. They will visit facilities three times, but the challenge with this is that we had to reserve doses in advance before the program could begin. So right now we have had to reserve roughly 125,000 doses for this program, even though obviously they can't administer all of those at once. That's how the program works. Next slide. We have used a hub and spoke distribution model, particularly for the Pfizer vaccine. So the vaccine gets delivered to the hubs, who have the capacity to store at that minus 80 degrees Celsius temp, and then they redistribute to 118 spokes all across the region. And local public health will receive vaccine directly. I want to acknowledge that because we use this model, we were able to use Pfizer vaccine across the state. Other states, we're in a position where they only use Pfizer in big population centers, and the rural parts of their state were not as well served. Next slide. Just to kind of explain how our allocation and distribution process works, it's quite complicated. And I think sometimes when we talk about vaccination, it seems like there's just two things. How many doses did you get, and how many did you put into an arm? And that seems like all the things you should have to worry about, but it is incredibly more complicated than that. What happens is we usually receive the number of new doses available on Tuesday. So what the feds are going to promise to us. We have a couple days then to figure out where those doses should go. So we calculate the doses available, we look at what regions they can go to, and then we send it to the regions to say, okay, how do you want these doses allocated within your region? Based on that information, we'll place an order with CDC on Thursday to say, this is where you actually ship the vaccine. And then the shipping from the vaccine distributor starts on Sunday, and when it arrives varies. It could be anywhere from Monday to Friday. And then once vaccine, particularly the Pfizer vaccine, arrives at the hub, it may be distributed even farther to a spoke site. So I just want to point out that we can have a dose of vaccine that is promised to us that shows up on our website on a Tuesday, and that vaccine may not actually reach its location in the state until the next Friday. That's one of the challenges with the numbers and just how this process works. But once we've done that, we just repeat it the next week. Next slide. This is the new vaccine dashboard that just was announced yesterday. It's much more user-friendly. You can look at each county and get specific information for that county. This shows you how many people have had at least one vaccine and then how many people have completed the series. I do want to acknowledge that we're looking at making some changes here. It says total doses promised from CDC. Right now, this includes both first doses and second doses, and that can be confusing for people. So we're looking at making that more straightforward, but then it divvies out how many doses have been shipped, how many doses have gone to the long-term care vaccination program, and then what percentage of doses have been used. And one of the things I want to acknowledge is that the time it takes from when a dose is administered until it shows up here. Our pharmacy partners have 72 hours before they even have to report to us. So they have a 72-hour time frame for reporting. Our other partners, it's 24 hours. And then once we get that data, let's say you vaccinate on Sunday, you report Monday. We gather all the data that's been reported Monday. On Tuesday, we put it into a data mart so it has 24 hours to run so we can check for any duplications, any errors, things like that. Wednesday, the data comes out, we review it, we get it all ready, we post it, and it gets posted on Thursday. So there's definitely a lag time in terms of the number of doses. And we know that definitely for our pharmacy program that they're lag time. Next slide. And then here again, the dashboard, what proportion of the population have received at least one dose, and then obviously the age group. You can see that our 65 plus group is a little bit behind. That's in part because the pharmacy program didn't start until a week later than the hospital program, and also because the federal program, we don't have any control over that program. That's being administered by CVS, Walgreens, and Thrifty White, and they're taking a little bit longer to get the vaccine administered. Next slide. And then here's just more information outlining the number of doses we've received of the different types of vaccine, as well as what kind of provider sites are receiving vaccine. And you can see that at this point, the majority of the providers are hospitals, pharmacies, you know, local public health, because that is where the vaccine is happening right now. Next slide. And then here again, vaccine administered by provider type. And you see that, you know, hospitals are the greatest. That's because we've been focusing on healthcare workers in 1A. And then you can see the pharmacy vaccination. That will be our elders in the pharmacy partnership program. And so that we expect to be increasing over the next weeks as that program completes itself. Next slide. In terms of phase 1B, again, we prepared these slides yesterday. The ACIP voted on what their recommendations for phase 1B were on the 20th. Our allocation work group met on the 30th and again on the 11th, and, you know, gave us guidance on sub-prioritization of 1B, and we're working to put all that together. But that certainly has sort of been usurped by the announcement yesterday by HHS. Next slide. So the new federal guidance, HHS announced an updated vaccination guidance yesterday. Basically what this says is that their intention is to release all doses, not hold back second doses. They want states to open up to 65 and older, as well as persons 18 to 64 with underlying health conditions. They're pushing for more, you know, broad vaccination in states. They did say that they're looking to change. Right now, our vaccination is allocated on a pro rata basis. So based on our population, they're looking to change that, possibly to look at, you know, our population 65 and older or with underlying health conditions, as well as our vaccine throughput. So that puts us in some really challenging positions. We have not received anything in writing from the federal government. And in fact, we didn't know, and our CDC partners didn't know, that the announcement would be made yesterday. So it did surprise us all. The changes to the allocation, they said, would be in 2 weeks, and we know that there'll be a new administration, but we have not heard anything from the Biden team in terms of what their thinking is. So there is very much up in the air right now with these announcements yesterday. Next slide. So just to let you know what this means in terms of numbers, our tier 1A we've estimated is approximately 500,000 Minnesotans. If we look at our 65 plus population, that is 918,000 Minnesotans. And then when you add in the 18 to 64 with underlying health conditions, that's another 1.3 million. So we're looking at about 2.2 million people that have just been added to the group to be vaccinated. And I want to be clear that we received our allocation yesterday for the next week, and we are still only getting 65,000 doses roughly. So we got no additional vaccine, but we've now got 2.2 million more people who are expecting to be vaccinated. So we're in a very challenging and difficult position. Next slide. The good news is that there are additional vaccines on the horizon. Johnson & Johnson is a single dose, which would certainly be easier from a logistic and operations standpoint. We're hoping that this could be approved in February, but again, not there yet. And then the AstraZeneca vaccine is in their phase three clinical trials. So again, we're hopeful that there will be additional vaccines available, but right now, to address vaccination, we have just the Moderna and the Pfizer, which I do want to acknowledge. When I say just, I want to acknowledge that a year ago at this time, we barely had the I don't know if we had the whole genome sequence of the virus yet, but to have a vaccine already is amazing. But unfortunately, we're at a place where the expectations of the public are such that even amazing and miraculous isn't sufficient right now. So next slide. So some of the challenges that we're facing, I mentioned that for healthcare workers, one of the reasons that there has had to be some, planning is that you want to stagger doses. You know, there are some general potential side effects where you just feel, muscle aches, headache, low-grade fever, fatigue. So you want to make sure that you don't vaccinate a whole unit at the same time so everyone's experiencing that all at once. So that we've encouraged hospitals to stagger vaccination. One of the things that I mentioned was this long-term care program, the PPP program. It is being run by the feds, and we don't really have any control over it, nor do we have control over the vaccine. We just allot it, and then it gets sent out to those pharmacy partners. Certainly future supply projections. We don't know what's coming. We would expect that we will get some more vaccine, but even if our allocation doubles to 120,000 doses a week, it would still take us almost 19 weeks to get through, so roughly 5 months to get through that new population. Then just the complexity at the local level. We definitely have given guidance of who should be vaccinated, but we do know that we don't want doses wasted. And so sometimes, they're looking for arms, and they may be vaccinating people that we wouldn't have had on our priority just to make sure they don't waste doses. And then obviously vaccine hesitancy is a backdrop that we experience all the time with vaccination. And so we are continuing to watch for that and understand what role that may have in our vaccination going forward. And next slide, I think that's it. So with that, I will turn it back. I don't know, Commissioner, if you had anything you wanted to say, or if I can turn it back to Representative Freiberg.
You're muted, Commissioner.
Back to you, Mr. Chairman, for questions. Thank you, Chris.
Sure, sounds good. Thank you for the information. That's very helpful. So members, if you do have any questions, please just raise your hand using the raise hand feature in Zoom. I do already have three members who've done so, Representative Akam, Pryor, and Heintzman. So I will call on them in that order. Representative Akam.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate the presentation this morning. So thank you. And I can't thank the Department of Health enough for all the hard work over the last year. It's hard to remember pre-COVID times, and you guys have done a great job, in my opinion, of responding to this incredibly challenging situation. And so thank you for all of that, and thank you for the work on the vaccine. And so I have a couple of questions, and the first is, I so appreciate the phased approach that you have in distributing the vaccinations. And to this point, the people who have received them have kind of gotten them at work or where they live, and it hasn't been something that a person has to necessarily seek out. And so as the phases continue going forward, and I know that obviously things are changing rapidly in the situation and new guidance and whatever, but so when their group might be available, how will they be informed about that? I've at this point been encouraging to keep in touch with or looking at your website, and so that's been a great resource. And so that's my first question about how will they know when it's ready? And then you also talked about these potential for other vaccines coming on line to be able to help. And so in that vein, are you, and recognizing that we're only getting 60,000 doses a week, and if so, if we're getting more, do you have a plan or an infrastructure in place to be able to distribute so we can get as many? I mean, we're all wanting to be vaccinated sooner than later. And so with that, to be able to, so the infrastructure to make that happen.
Ms. Ayersman, should I generally direct questions to you or to Commissioner Malcolm?
Mr. Chair, I think Chris should be the presumed first answer here. She is a fountain of detailed knowledge.
Sure. Thank you, Commissioner. Ms. Ayersman.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg and Representative. So yes, you're right. In this first phase, vaccination is very clear. It's either you're getting it where you live or, as you said, where you work. With these, as we're expanding out and as we're in this new territory of adding additional populations, we will be doing outreach. So there will be, you know, media outreach, as well as we'll be providing information to people on how they could sign up to access vaccination. So that is part of the plan. And as we move forward, we anticipate that vaccination would occur both in an individual's healthcare home, potentially through pharmacies, at stand-up clinics that the state would set up, through local public health, so through a variety of means. So the team has been planning for that, and we are prepared to do that. I think the biggest challenge, and I'll say this over and over again, because we can't get over the fact that we've got 2.2 million people who now want to be vaccinated, and we still only have 60,000 doses. So I think the more that we are able to set expectations with the public, our desire is for everyone to have vaccine, but we only have what we are allotted from the federal government. So, you know, even as we're looking for this expansion and we're getting news out about where people could sign up for vaccine, we do need to keep level setting about the number of doses that we have. Thank you.
Representative Akam?
May I just follow up? I think you said in the different ways that you'll be getting people vaccinated. Did you say you're thinking about vaccinating individuals in their homes? Is that did I misunderstand? Oh,
no, I'm sorry. Healthcare homes.
Thank you. That's helpful. I appreciate it. Yeah. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have to start by saying and just emphasizing again how quickly we have come, really, in terms of this whole discussion of vaccination. And that I can remember during the summer having a conversation with an expert in infectious disease, and he was telling me to begin with, like, we can't even be sure we're going to get a vaccine. You know, after all these years of fighting the common cold, we still don't have a vaccine against colds. So just to know that, and then I think that people in Minnesota should understand that even if we don't have it tomorrow, the fact that it's out there and that there are two vaccines and that there's others on deck that are coming, I think that we can start by feeling, you know, a sense of hope this morning in this conversation, and that that's something that, you know, I'm glad that you highlighted, and that we can begin with that discussion of what, you know, of how much we can look forward to this rolling out rather than going into some kind of panic mode because we don't have it last week. We have what we have, and that we can do this in Minnesota in a way that keeps our values front and center, which is that, yes, we care for our elders. We also care for an orderly process that doesn't put 80-year-olds waiting online all night before their chance for a vaccine. That's not a very Minnesota way of doing it, especially since it's in the winter. But I do have a couple questions, and it's just to make sure that I understand and that my constituents and the people of Minnesota can really understand some of the details of how this is working. So if I may Chair Freiberg, I have actually three different questions that I would like to get through. To begin with, I want to start with just even the mechanics of it. I know that we'll be all watching the website in this race to get people vaccinated. And if I understood it correctly, you hear, the Department of Health hears about the vaccines kind of online, you know, hypothetically, they're there. And then you actually have to worry about them being delivered and to the right place. And that's on a Tuesday. And that the process has been about on Friday, they're actually at the locations where they will be administered. And then that there is, after that, a reporting lag of maybe 2 days, or on that part I wasn't so sure, but that a couple days after that, it actually has to be reported that the vaccines are coming out there. So it's like a week between when you you hear, or when the vaccines are in the pipeline, they should be arriving, and then we know that they've been actually administered in Minnesota. Mr. Chair, that's my first question.
Commissioner Malcolm?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Pryor. First, thanks again for acknowledging just how remarkable it is that we have vaccines. It just is something to be remarkable. It's a remarkable achievement, and thank you for that context again. Actually, the timeline is longer than that. As Chris was describing, it's yesterday, last night, we got the number for next week. On Thursday of this week, so tomorrow, we can start putting orders into the federal ordering system, telling the feds how many doses go to which locations. So all those orders start going in tomorrow. And then the shipping actually begins of those orders on Sunday of this week. And then when they actually show up depends upon the shipper, weather, all kinds of, you know, logistical issues on their end. So it can, the vaccine can start arriving anytime from Monday through Friday of next week. So it's essentially almost 2 weeks before, since we know that the allocation to Minnesota, and when pretty good confidence that the vaccine has actually arrived where it is going to be vaccinated, where the vaccination is actually going to happen.
Representative Pryor.
And thank you. So, you know, again, just so I understand, so it's actually 2 weeks between when you're notified that you can order it to when it actually might arrive at the site.
It can be that long. Yeah.
Can be that long. And then it has to get to, you know, get into the arms, as people right. are trying to say now. And then the reporting of that is a certain number of days after that, too.
Commissioner.
Correct. Yes.
Representative Pryor.
All right. Thank you. And so, again, it's just we have to benchmark actually reality and how these things work and or how they're working right now. Then the other part that I wanted to clarify and understand is, as I was listening, is we signed up to be working with a federal program of distribution is how I understand it right now through the pharmacies. And then that it was, and I know that there was an actual number that we, 125,000 was reserved, which, you know, good. I'm so glad we did that. But then also then I understand that distribution of it, then we're not directly controlling that we have to, whatever those pharmacies and their program is what's driving that and directing that. And so is that a correct understanding, or is there a better way of stating that? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Malcolm.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pryor, that's basically right. That is the long-term care part of the allocation. So that's for starting with skilled nursing facilities, and we believe, but we don't have great data out of that program. As you point out, the contracts are between those national pharmacy chains and the federal government. So we're not directly in that loop. But as we get data back from the federal government, we're also surveying our skilled nursing facilities and assisted living facilities to see how it's going from their perspective. That we believe that all the skilled nursing facilities should be done by the end of this week with the first dose, and then they'll need their second doses when we're starting on assisted living facilities So that federal program, just to be clear, is really aimed at that long-term care side. I think you characterized it accurately, but Chris, I might be missing a key detail there. Do you want to add?
Director.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg and Representative Pryor. I just wanted to add that when we learned that...
If you could speak kind of into your microphone, it would be...
Oh, okay, is this better?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. When we learned that ACIP would be adding long-term care to the priority list, we actually worked to get a few of our our long-term care out of that program so that we could expand the number of providers that were available. So in other words, at CVS and Walgreens and Thrifty White, when we learned that long-term care would be included, we got about 89 facilities out of the program so that we could use other pharmacies and local public health to try and diversify providers and speed up vaccination. But for the facilities that signed up for the program, they are in the program and that vaccine is set aside for them, and there's not much we can do about that now.
Okay. Representative Pryor.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. And then the last question that I have is that just your description of the advisory group. So very impressive in its makeup and the diversity of the makeup. But then I'm also thinking now that we're on the threshold this year, it's going to happen, of mass vaccination, that who on that team or who in the Department of Health is basically there to do the supply chain, you know, which is all kinds of businesses do supply chains, which is, you know, how to most efficiently get things out. And it is a question of efficiency at this point. So it's not letting perfect get in the way of good, because I get it, that this is a race to get the vaccine into as many arms as quickly as possible as the vaccine becomes available to us in Minnesota. So how is the advisory group or the Department of Health working with that ups, you know, that 2.2 million people? It's done it. I'm not in that group. So it's like, get that group done so that I can be in that next group that gets it in the arm. I'm ready. But just this mass distribution of getting it to that next group, that 2.2 million people. And then after that, how to get it to the rest of us.
Commissioner Malcolm?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pryor, the role of the vaccine allocation work group really is on the looking at the Minnesota data, looking at disease incidence, severity, mortality, equity questions. So their role really is to, as Chris said earlier, take what was very broad federal guidance and add some more details to it as a recommendation to the governor. But strictly on how would you sub-prioritize, like the phase 1A that Chris described, coming up with this idea of priority one, then priority two, then priority three, was what the Minnesota work group did based on, how to get the most bang for the buck, so to speak, from a health protection perspective. But really, they don't have a role in the logistics of implementation. We have a large vaccine team at the department that is working on that and working closely with local public health and with our healthcare systems all of those entities will play a role as we get into more, as you say, you know, broad population vaccination. Chris, anything to add?
Director Ayersman.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg and Representative Pryor. Yes, as the commissioner said, we do have a team that's job is just purely logistics and operations, and they are working with some of the folks that helped stand up the testing that happened in Minnesota. And so we're able to use lessons learned from that experience, in the planning for vaccination.
Okay. Representative Pryor, does that answer your questions? Okay. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Pulled over at a parking lot, so just want to confirm that. So a lot of my questions have already been answered. I really appreciate that Commissioner Malcolm is here today, as well as Director Kristen. And just wanted to hit a couple that I don't think have been thoroughly discussed yet. Because, like I said, there's been a couple that have already been hit. The number one question I get from people is first of all, where is the vaccine and when can I get it? That makes sense. But then there's also questions. There's some concerns that people have voiced to me. In fact, just before I came on today, before the committee started, I had a healthcare professional call me who's had COVID and is working in a system that is likely going to be requiring that employees be vaccinated for COVID, whether they've had COVID or not. And I don't think we need to get into a big discussion about the technicality, the science there necessarily. But I am wondering if Commissioner Malcolm, if you're hearing or if you're a part of any of those discussions, is the Walls administration or anybody else encouraging institutions to require that their employees are vaccinated? It is a question for those that would like to have a choice whether they are or not. And if your employment is being threatened, of course, that's a big question for some people. Not a huge amount, but there are those out there, and I would just like to hear from you on that issue, Commissioner.
Commissioner Malcolm.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Heintzman, thank you. So I don't know if you have any remaining questions on the where is the vaccine and who can get it. I think we've hopefully answered that for you. On the question of can employers require vaccination of their employees, that's a whole area of employment law that I'm not expert in by any means. But under the emergency use authorization, which is these vaccines are approved, not through regular licensure yet, that will happen at some point in time. But right now, these vaccines are available under this special federal designation called emergency use authorization. And when vaccines are in that status, it cannot be required that they, vaccination cannot be required for vaccines in emergency use authorization. And again, whether employers have a different legal interpretation, I would have to leave to them. The administration has no intention of requiring vaccination as a policy matter. That would be a discussion for another day at such time as these vaccines become fully licensed, whether they fit into the state's vaccination requirement system would be a matter for legislative discussion. But that is not our position, unless Chris would like to add.
Director Ayersman.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg and Representative Heintzman. Just to be clear, Commissioner, I don't want to add that we would like to mandate the vaccine, not at all, but I just wanted to add an additional point of clarification. There is a team that has gotten together to just look at what does, for instance, the equal or the EEOC laws and what do they recommend about vaccination and things. And so they are going to be putting together information and guidance to assist employers. But I think it's very clear that if an employer would choose to do something related to mandating vaccines, that there would be a lot of other legal considerations. So just to say that there is a team that's talking about this just so that people can have access to good information. But yes, our guidance is that for something that's under an emergency use authorization, that mandating, we would not recommend any mandate.
Is that team that's working on this part of MDH? I mean, I assume it's not the State Vaccine Advisory Council, because they're just working on prioritization, correct? I assume this team would have attorneys and...
Yes, this, Representative Freiberg, this is actually an enterprise team, so it does include legal. It includes our... I'm having a total brain freeze on the... our Human Rights Commission commissioner, legal from there. So it's that group that is looking.
Thank you. Representative Heintzman, sorry to interject my own question there.
No, that's okay, Mr. Chair. And so, Director and Commissioner, I appreciate those answers, and I'm glad that you delved into the discussion about the differentiation between the early stages of a vaccine in an emergency, as opposed to once it is transitioning into a mainstream vaccination, when it becomes licensed. You know, I do think that, and I should just clarify, my question was specifically referring to as this progresses and it becomes licensed, what would be your expectation, or what would be the administration's expectation? That was what I was looking for, a clarification in terms of a mandate. My second question would be, I heard, I think, Director Ayersman, you had mentioned that hospitals are staggering their vaccination rollouts for staff because of some of the side effects of the vaccination. And you mentioned a few of those side effects, aching, fatigue, a number of other things. I'm also hearing about an anaphylactic reaction that some people have reported. And I'm wondering if that is a rumor, if that's real, and maybe some of the other reactions. There's all kinds of rumors, and hopefully those things could be talked about if in fact that is reality, and what are we seeing on the ground? Hopefully those two questions we could get a little bit more clarification from the commissioner or from Director Ayersman.
Commissioner or Director Ayersman, one of you, Commissioner Malcolm.
Chris, would you take that?
Sure.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg and Representative Heintzman. So there is an ongoing post-licensure safety evaluation program. This happens for all vaccines. So even after a vaccine has been approved by the FDA, there are rigorous ongoing safety evaluations that happen. So that is true for these new COVID vaccines as well. In terms of anaphylactic reactions, we do get reports every week of what's been happening. And I think an anaphylactic reaction is very different than feeling achy after the vaccine. So I think we have to be really careful about how we refer to that. Feeling achy after the vaccine, what I just described, is really the your body's immune system just responding to the vaccine. So, we know that that is to be expected, and that's actually a good thing. So in terms of, are we getting reports? Yes, we certainly are getting reports of people, just general reports, but not for anaphylaxis. That's not something that we've been hearing about. So I think that may be kind of an urban legend. And certainly, as we acknowledge, there have been reports nationally of individuals who've had anaphylactic reactions to vaccine. And that's part of the training that we did with providers, was making sure that they knew which individuals should be deferred from receiving vaccine, and also making sure that they had protocols in place to be able to respond. So if someone has an anaphylactic reaction, it's very dramatic. And just to be clear that we would not expect to have had dozens of anaphylactic reactions that we were not aware of, because it's quite a dramatic situation.
Thank you. Representative Heintzman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the first part of that question was also the clarification on once the COVID vaccination is licensed, is the administration looking forward to down the road potentially having any kind of a mandate, or allowing or moving towards supporting businesses that would require mandate? It wasn't that long ago that Essentia was pushing a mandate, and in fact, I believe 80 or 90 employees were terminated when they wouldn't take the flu shot. And so that was the question, Commissioner Malcolm, that I specifically was asking for the individual that contacted me this morning and was concerned that that would also be a rollout for healthcare workers, regardless of whether or not they had COVID, had a positive test and then antibodies to prove that they had COVID. So I just want a clarification there. And then finally, just to finish up, Mr. Chair, I would finish my comments and hope that those questions would be answered. But I finished my comments with I really appreciate the work that is being done for those that want the vaccination. It's absolutely critical that they're able to access that. And I hope that the rollout continues to be chiseled into a machine that can allow people to access, allow people who need the vaccination, who are in a vulnerable category, vulnerable group, to access a vaccination as soon as they can possibly get it. So if those two questions could, the clarification and the question could be answered, I would appreciate that. Thanks for the time, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Did you have, Commissioner, Director Ayersman, did you have anything on the, I mean, I did hear you sort of touch on the question, just that, you know, once it.
Mr. Chair, can I try again? Because I'm sorry if I confused you. I very specifically would like the commissioner to let us know if once the vaccination is licensed for COVID, are businesses or the state going to be encouraged to require, or are businesses specifically like Essentia that force their employees on threat of being fired to take a vaccination in just the last year and a half or 2 years that happened. Is that going to be rolled out or being encouraged to be rolled out here in Minnesota once COVID vaccination is licensed?
I understood your question, Representative Heintzman. I was going to throw it back to the commissioner, and I will do that. I was just saying, you know, it's somewhat speculative at this point because, you know, it hasn't been approved yet. So I don't know how much they have an ability to answer that, but Commissioner Malcolm, if you have anything, or Director Ayersman.
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Heintzman. We have not had any discussions about that. I understand your question, I don't believe, but I would have to ask Chris with her extensive history on these issues. I'm not familiar in my time. The department has not taken a position on that question. And should it be mandated, it would be recommended for becoming part of the required immunizations under Minnesota's immunization laws. That would be a matter for legislative discussion and decision. But Chris, can you shed any light on historically, has the department had a position on that?
Director Ayersman.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg and Representative Heintzman. I think probably what I'd say is, I mean, certainly we have vaccines that are required as part of our school and child care immunization law. That law does allow for an exemption at this point. What I would say related to this vaccine is that it is premature to really talk about that because there's a lot of things that we don't know. Is the vaccine going to be needed annually? What will the duration of protection be? All of those things, I think, are really important pieces of information for anyone that wants to do a thoughtful review of that kind of a conversation for mandating, and we don't have that information yet. So certainly we have vaccines that are included and required for children in childcare and schools, so we certainly have done that. But I think at this point, it's premature to comment on that. We know that the vaccine is very effective, but there are many other things we don't know. And so I would say that we would want to defer. And actually, I can't think, I mean, there are certainly vaccines that are recommended occupationally. And so some healthcare systems, you know, have expectations for their employees to receive, you know, measles vaccine or varicella vaccine for employment. But as a state, we have not required that, only in the school setting and with the exemption.
Thank you, Director Ayersman. Satisfied, Representative Heintzman? Is that there any follow-up?
Quite honestly, it sounded like a punt to me because we aren't obviously making any kind of statements relative to once the vaccine is licensed. And, of course, the flu shot is included in the list of those that are required, and it's somewhat controversial. So that's part of the reason I am bringing it up, Mr. Chair, because people are asking. As I mentioned earlier, the number one question is, where is the vaccine and where can I get it? But this is also a part of the discussion. And so that's why I'm asking. And hopefully at some point those questions can be more fully answered, especially as there's more information available.
Sure. No, I don't anticipate this will be our last discussion on this issue. I am also looking, Director Ayersman raised the issue of childhood vaccines. That is something I think at some point we will be discussing in this committee, potentially with another informational hearing like this, at least to start with. So thank you, Representative Heintzman. Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to Commissioner Malcolm and Director Ayersman. Again, just want to reiterate my appreciation and thanks for all the work that you guys have been doing on, you know, with testing and giving information to Minnesotans and as well as with the vaccine rollout. My question touches on a part of the presentation, particularly as this may get expanded to people who are 65 and above, as well as people with underlying conditions. What are some of the engagement plans, particularly with the varied communities we have in Minnesota from a language perspective and ethnicity perspective, to engage directly with those communities to make sure that they understand the new information that is coming out? Again, you know, similar as other people have asked, you know, when and how would they be eligible for the vaccine? Where can they get it? And as well as engagement that addresses any concerns that some of these communities historically have had with the medical profession. Thank you.
Commissioner Malcolm.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Agbaje, thank you so much for that observation. It is absolutely critical that we pay attention to communities who are disproportionately affected by exposure to the virus by virtue of their working circumstances, the kind of jobs they do, housing conditions and the like, both the incidence of disease, the severity of disease, and the ultimate outcomes we know vary considerably across different population groups. And it's going to be extremely important that we have specific strategies to reach those populations and to reach them through community leaders who know the communities and who are the trusted leaders, trusted voices, trusted educators. We will be relying very significantly on our community clinics, federally qualified health centers and other community clinics, as well as community-based organizations, faith leaders and the like, to not only be doing the vaccinating, but to be doing the community education and outreach. And one of the things we're grateful for the legislature having funded in the last session was a significant investment in communications outreach, working with a number of community-based organizations and community media to be sure that we are getting information into the, not just the right language translation, but the right communication strategies to reach specific communities. And that is work that is ongoing. We have a number of community liaisons that the legislature has also helped to fund through COVID Minnesota funds that are working on very specific engagement plans for each community. So that we have a kind of a framework of the engagement plan, but the specifics of that are being developed right now by those community liaisons in consultation with community groups. Certainly can get you more information on any specific questions that you have.
Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I appreciate that, Commissioner Malcolm, and definitely would appreciate seeing more of those plans. And then just a follow-up to that, another group that's also, you know, really quite concerned about, you know, their priority in line for the vaccines are people who live in public housing, particularly, you know, high rises and they live in close quarters. You know, my understanding is some of those groups may have reached out to you already about, you know, seeking, you know, a clarification to where they might be in the priority as those lines get developed. So if you have any more information on that about where people in public housing, particularly many of them do have underlying conditions and are, you know, in the vulnerable age groups that have been identified by both Minnesota and the CDC. Thank you.
Commissioner Malcolm.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Agbaje, that's a perfect example of really where our local public health partners know a lot more specifics about particular housing, high-rise housing settings where they know they've worked with those populations on other health issues. And how to outreach to them to make sure that they know how to get access to vaccinations at their community clinics. As Chris mentioned, we will also be doing some community-based testing, as we have done with community-based vaccination, as we have done with testing, So I think it will be a matter of, you know, of making the vaccines accessible to those populations, but also making sure that somebody's reaching out to them to help them know where to go and how to get vaccinated. At this point in time, we don't have housing-based prioritization other than through congregate care settings like group homes and assisted living. But as you say, much of those populations will meet other criteria for prioritization, such as age or underlying health conditions. And we'll be looking to their healthcare providers, if they have healthcare relationships, and to local public health to help us find them and get them connected to vaccination.
Representative Igbaje.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and Commissioner and Director.
Thank you. Representative Ackland.
Good morning. I want to apologize because my Zoom, I have a strong echo, so I'm sorry if I'm talking funny, but my Zoom program has got some glitches this morning that wouldn't let me sign in, and now it won't let me use the camera. So that's why I'm blank here. But I had a question about the, as we move forward into giving these additional 2.2 million people, I have a question. If we're going to be assured that there will be enough vaccine to give the second dose when it's due, and my question surrounding that is, for many vaccines, timing is super critical. I know even with some of the childhood vaccines that the that if timing is off, that you have to start the series over. That's rare, but it does happen. And so I wanted to make sure that if we open this up to this 2.2 million, we will be able to give the second vaccine in the appropriate time. And then my second question was, is there a program that will be able to share this information of vaccine when they were given? So as people move around, we can access that, see when their vaccine was given, if or not it was given. I believe the children's vaccine program was called MinVac. It's been a while. But those are my two questions, and I'm sorry for this terrible echo that I have and for not being able to see me. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Ackland. Commissioner Malcolm.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ackland, thank you. That the question of how to assure that second doses are given is a really critical one. And that's one of the things that just abruptly changed on us yesterday, that the federal government had been assuring us that they would assure that the second doses were held in reserve and available to us, tied to the timing required for after the first dose, because this is the case where the timing of the second dose is important. I mean, all the effectiveness data that we have through the clinical trials was based on a second specified timelines. So now, as of yesterday, we've been told that yes, the feds will release more of the vaccine supply to us, but now it will be on us to assure that supply is sufficient to cover second doses and not just use all the supply for first doses and then not have enough supply for the second doses. So we have a new significant logistical planning challenge to figure out and figure out in a hurry, depending upon when the federal government intends to implement this new policy. We don't know that yet, but we will be figuring that out, how to reserve the second doses and get them where they need to be. And I will turn it over to Chris to comment on how the information system can help us with that tracking.
Sure. Director Ayersman.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg and Representative Ackland. So I will just add to the question about the second doses, and that is that's part of the reason why I think messaging will be so important as we talk with the public, to acknowledge that not only are we expanding to a very, very large proportion of the population, 2.2 million people, but even even with that, we still have to manage the second doses for previously vaccinated populations. So I think that that's important messaging that you can help us socialize. In terms of the information about vaccination, I think the program that you want to be thinking of is the Minnesota Immunization Information Connection, or MIC. It's an immunization information system, and basically that is where all the reports of vaccination are entered. So we do have that information on individuals unless they opt out. So we would have information on who had been vaccinated with COVID. Individuals who are vaccinated also receive a card at the time they're vaccinated that, you know, the information about their vaccine is recorded on, so they will have that as well. But we do have this electronic information system that will allow us to have that information as well, should you need to check back. I mean, we have people, parents that call and say, well, my child's going to kindergarten, I need to check their records, and we're able to assist with that.
Thank you, Director Erzman. Seth, any follow-up, Representative Ackland?
So my question is, then these patients would take this information to their doctors to be entered into that database, or are pharmacists and other people who are giving vaccines able to enter into the database?
Director Erzman.
Representative Freiberg and Representative Ackland. Actually, yes, pharmacists as well as the folks that are doing the vaccinating will enter the data into the database, so it will be accessible there. And then most healthcare providers and health systems have access to MIC, so that if I happen to be vaccinated at, say, a community clinic that was not my healthcare system, my healthcare provider would be able to go into the registry, into MIC, the immunization information connection, and see that, oh, Chris Ayersman did get a vaccine. So it does circle back to the healthcare home as well.
Representative Ackland?
You've answered my question. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first, I just want to reiterate my heartfelt thanks to Commissioner and the Director for the incredible job they've done this over this unprecedented year. And I hate to ask another question about the queue, but I have been getting questions from students, medical, nursing, PA, students who are involved in direct patient care. Where do they fall in the priority list for getting the vaccination? Thanks.
Commissioner or Malcolm, do you want
to? I would defer that one to Chris. I'm not familiar with whether students have been discussed as a specific subgroup.
Sure. Director Ayersman.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg and Representative Morrison. Yes, if they are part of, you know, providing care, then they would fall into phase 1A. It's likely that because they're not affiliated with a health system, that they would be in that third tier where we're catching up on people to get vaccinated. And so that is a group that we are finishing, or we're starting with assisted living this week. We're finishing, I think most of the systems have done their tier two people, and so we should be able to expand to the third tier of healthcare workers at this point. So we should be able to start reaching out to that population. Although, as you are hearing, we now have other competing priorities as well, but they are part of the group, but would be in the third tier.
Thank you. Representative Morrison? Thank you. Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for Commissioner Malcolm and Director Ayersman for being with us today. This is all really good information. I also want to just thank you for the leadership you've provided since the beginning of this pandemic. Your continual briefings you've held have been extremely helpful for all of us and all Minnesotans. Just wonderful to have all that good information on a nearly daily basis from you. And I just want to thank you for the good work and bringing that factual information forward. It's been a big help for all of us. Great questions today from everybody. And a lot of my questions have been answered with those. But I did have one question. as you sit from yesterday, having been told to open up everything to larger groups, and you need 2.2 million vaccinations to accomplish that task, and you're getting, I think I heard 65,000 at a crack. That is truly trying to put a square peg in a round hole and complicates your work. And unfortunately, we all know that there was delay with the federal government in ordering these vaccines when they had opportunities, not once, but twice. And that's where we find ourselves in a position now where we have this shortage we have to manage, and it will be going on for months. So my question is, with this delay and with this priority kind of set determined on who should get them next, is there a further priority of picking, I guess, certain underlying conditions that would go before others, or is there a discussion that will happen around that? Because I know you're spreading it out and trying to do it equitably, which makes sense, but I'm just wondering if you can add any more detail to how those decisions are made for underlying conditions, please.
Commissioner Malcolm.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bierman, thank you. Thank you, Representative Bierman, and all of you who have recognized the hard work of the department. We really appreciate it, and we'll pass that on to our colleagues at MDH as well as local public health. On the question of should we or can we prioritize below the level that the feds have now given us around comorbid conditions in particular, that's an active discussion right now about whether that adds value or not. I think what we've heard from federal Health and Human Services folks and some of the feedback from our own health systems in Minnesota has been that kind of the more precise we try to make it, the more complicated it is to operationalize, and the slower it tends to happen. But honestly, there are arguments on both sides. There is that just horrible math problem of how are we going to manage expectations on the part of that very large population on the one hand, versus on the other hand, not making it overly complicated so that it's hard for people to really know what's happening or who's eligible or how to operationalize it. The hope is with increased supply for sure. And that's where, again, you know, there is some confusion. It's a little unclear yet when the federal government says, and Governor Walz has encouraged the federal government to release any doses that are extra held in reserve. And what is unclear is how much of the extra is actually second doses versus what is underutilized supply that hasn't yet been released. So That's among the many things that we're waiting to learn more about in the coming hours and days. Whether we will be recommending as guidance ways to further prioritize on the basis of comorbid conditions, that's a conversation that's ongoing. But I will also just say, and implicit in what we've talked about all during this whole meeting, we issue guidance that is intended to help get the biggest impact out of the vaccinations, but we do rely on private sector delivery to a large degree and a fair amount of regional control over how allocations are happening, which is intended to just let people closer to the ground, make the best decisions possible for their circumstances. So even if we suggest guidance, health systems may choose to implement that a little bit differently. Perfectly transparent about that. Chris, anything you'd want to add?
Director.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg and Representative Bierman. The only thing that I would add to that is just that as we're evaluating what level of recommendation to share with the vaccinators, as I mentioned, one of the things that we don't know yet from the federal government is whether or not our allocation will be dependent on how quickly we are able to vaccinate people. And if it is no longer pro rata, but based on throughput, then any time that you add another element to evaluate that slows things down, as the commissioner said. So that's one of the things that's kind of hanging out there that we don't know yet, and that would be a reason to say, look, we've just got to do this as quickly as possible, if in fact that is the direction that the federal government tells us that they're going. And that would, that direction would likely undermine our goals of being more thoughtful and planful about sub-prioritization.
All right, we're starting to run a little low on time. Representative Bierman, any follow-up?
No follow-up questions. Just thank you for the good answers, and keep up the good work, and let us know how we can be of assistance.
Thank you. I do have a question, as long as there's no other members on the list. So it ties into Representative Agbaje's question. In my mind, you know, the way we're going to get past this pandemic is basically having as many people get vaccinated as possible. And there is an issue out there with vaccine hesitancy. I know Representative Agbaje talked a little bit about some of the concerns in different subpopulations of people. I'm just wondering if some of the outreach efforts you mentioned that MDH is undertaking is being directed specifically at addressing those sorts of concerns and issues related to vaccine hesitancy. And Commissioner Malcolm, I see you unmuted yourself.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's important, I think, to address a couple of different layers of that. First, there is the sort of general vaccine hesitancy. There is specific question about these two vaccines and how quickly they were developed, and questions about do we really have all the data we need on effectiveness and safety and so forth. So there are some of those vaccine-specific things, and then there's sort of general vaccine hesitancy. But then there is also just the reality that for certain communities, there is a deep mistrust of government healthcare programs and vaccination programs in specific due to very specific historical things that have happened, historical trauma and mistreatment of populations through vaccination. And it's really important to acknowledge that and to make sure that that communications address that, and that the vaccinators, be they local public health or healthcare systems or community clinics, are versed in that and understand the true history and the importance of respecting the concerns around vaccination that come from those historical realities. So all of that is part of the strategy and part of the training that anyone involved with vaccination is asked to go through.
Great, thank you, that's helpful. Well, no other members are on the list, so I wanna thank you both for your time. I know you have a lot of demands on it right now, so I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us and answer all of our questions. I know this is a discussion we'll be going on. I anticipate as bills come before this committee, we will also take public testimony when bills are before our committee, so we do wanna hear from the public as well. But I thought hearing from you at the outset could help ground us in some of the issues the state is facing right now with that. So thank you once again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, is there, and you're welcome to stay for the rest of the committee. I mean, there's only a few minutes left, but you're welcome to leave if you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the time.
Thank you. Do members have any questions about the committee going forward before we adjourn? Just wanted to check on that. Representative Pryor.
Thank you for recognizing me. And I just the final comment I think that we still also take away is the director of the CDC said right now widespread mask use is similar to worrying to getting a vaccine. So as we heard today, even this 2.2 million people that we're trying to vaccinate in that first group, which is 65 and older and with underlying conditions, it might take 5 months if the supply doesn't increase. So just to reiterate, which is the message from MDH, from CDC, from all of the healthcare professionals and experts in this field, is that we still have a role to play, which is just that common sense of protect other people, protect yourselves and your family, continue to wear a mask in public. And I think as the preventive health committee, it's good for us to remind ourselves of this. And I look to Dr. Morrison for final comments on how we can prevent the spread of this disease.
Representative Morrison, did you have anything to add?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Pryor, I'm always happy to reiterate the message of wearing a mask when you're in public, particularly in indoor spaces, washing your hands, staying home if you're sick, and getting tested if you don't feel well. Thanks for the opportunity to reiterate that. We can't say it enough.
Thank you both. Any additional questions? Okay, our next meeting is scheduled for next Wednesday at 10:30. Seeing no additional questions, thank you for your time, and this meeting is adjourned.